This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. Amateur Traveler, episode 886. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about hiking and abseiling, wine and penny farthings, bush tucker and a bush ranger, as we go to northern Tasmania. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Tasmania. I'd like to welcome to the show Paula Barnes from trulyexpattravel.com, who's come to talk to us about northern Tasmania. Paula, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
And Paula and I are longtime friends who've known each other for a year and a half, but somehow it seems longer. So
it does, actually.
So, Paula, what is your connection with Tasmania?
So, obviously I'm Australian. You can hear by my accent. And although I don't live in Australia, I recently went on a TV program and they took me to northern Tasmania. Now, I've been to Tasmania before, but not northern Tasmania. And I feel like I'm hoping that I do it justice because it's an amazing place.
And I love the fact that you just gloss over, I went on a TV program. Like that happens every Tuesday.
Yeah, do you know what? I was lucky enough to be able to go on a TV program called Adventure All Stars. And basically what it is that you raise money for a charity and in return they take you to a destination that you don't know where you're going until a day or two before. And they take you on an adventure. And I was lucky enough to go to northern Tasmania.
Excellent. And why should someone go to northern Tasmania?
Firstly, it's because it's now classed as one of the 50 cities that is the UNESCO City of Gastronomy. Australia has two. We have one in Bendigo, but we also now have one in Launceston. And so that, I mean, it's a foodie's paradise. Mm. It's also amazing landscape and it's an adventure area. I didn't realize that. I thought this part of the world we had Queenstown in New Zealand, but I'm telling you now, I think Queenstown needs to move over because I think this part of the world has got just as many amazing adventure things to do. We don't have bungee jumping, but we have everything else.
Okay. When you say everything else and you're comparing yourself to Queenstown, there's a lot of everything there. So
yes, it's got everything else.
Curious to get into that.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, where are we going to start? What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Okay, so we're going to start in Launceston because it is full of history. Basically, it's the third oldest city in Australia, and it has a lot of convict history. So basically, we all know that Port Arthur, although it's not part of Launceston, Port Arthur was where all the convicts went. It used to be Van Diemen's Land, but it also, this part of Launceston is all built by convicts, and a lot of the history is still there because all the buildings are still there. But we're going to start in Launceston, and the best way to get to Launceston is we don't have an international airport, so you're going to have to fly from Hobart, drive from Hobart, or drive from Devonport and get the ferry over. And our first day is just basically getting to know the food around Launceston. My ideal itinerary would start on a Saturday, and it would start in the warmer weather. But if it does, then you should go to the harvest market. The harvest market is amazing. It's got all the local produce. So not only can you buy local produce, but you can also buy lots of, they've got little vendors where you can buy and taste all the local food. So you can literally eat your way around the market in the morning. If you're not there on a Saturday, don't worry. You've got lots of little cafes around Launceston that you can try. I would highly recommend one I went to, which is called the Tatler Lane by Sweet Brew. It's got amazing coffee and amazing breakfast. So it doesn't matter what time of the year that you go there, it's always going to be open. So my first morning would be eating. Basically just trying all of what Launceston has to offer. Okay. And then you would make your way over to, now it's going to be very odd, but they have monkeys. They have Japanese monkeys in a park about 10 minutes walk away from main part of Launceston. And in the park, so in 1965, Hokkaido in Japan became the sister city of Launceston. Not sure why, but it became the sister city. And they gifted them Japanese monkeys. So they have this area in the park where you can go in for free and look at these Japanese monkeys. So that's a cool thing to do in the morning.
And they these are macaques from what I'm reading.
Yes, they are. I mean, if you never go to Japan and you only go to Tasmania, this is the best place to see them. So, and they're roaming around, like, it's not a huge area, but it's big enough to really get to see them interact, which is quite a little bit of fun, especially if you've got kids. And kids love to see animals, especially monkeys. You can continue walking around the park. I mean, it's a beautiful park. It's got lots of flowers and lots of statues, and it's quite pretty. But I highly recommend going to the Queen Victoria Museum and Art Gallery. And in Australia, we like to abbreviate everything. So it's known as the QVBMAG. So then it's 125 years old. So for us in Australia, that's really old. I know you go to other places in the world and it's like 125-year-old is like yesterday and still in, it's only two generations. But for us, it's huge. It's a very old museum for us. So it's got a lot of artifacts. It's got a lot of history. So if you want to know about the history of the area, that's the place to start. So the morning is all about just taking it easy, looking at the museum. And then in the evening, you're going to go off and taste a little bit more of what Launceston has to offer. And I highly recommend there's a bar called Bar Urbain, which is basically a cocktail bar, and it's in a beautiful area overlooking the Tama River. So I would highly suggest going there before you go to dinner. And so your dinner will be like Asian fusion. I know that the thing about Australia is we don't really have a cuisine. We just like to take a little bit of every other country and call it our own. We do that with celebrities too, actually. We still fuse celebrities from New Zealand and say they're our own, and we do that with food as well. And this place, Mud Bar, it's Asian fusion, and it's a lot of seafood. I guess the region is known for its seafood as well.
Okay.
So the first day is all about just eating and getting to know the city. There's two things I wanted to mention. There's a couple of places where you can go and you can stay. You can stay at, a lot of times in Australia, we tend to go to, I guess you'd call them caravan parks, but we have cabins.
RV parks.
RV parks, but a lot of them have cabins. So a lot of families will go and stay. And so there's one called the Big Four, which is really good, highly rated because it's in a really good location. So You do need to hire a car in Tasmania, I believe, because then you get to really explore the area. You don't have to, but it is the easiest way to get around, especially on this itinerary. I would highly recommend getting a car. And if you stay there, then you can cook your own food, so buying the produce in the area. And there's a barbecue area there as well, and a kitchenette. So you have two ways of traveling around here. You can go the budget way or the family-friendly way by cooking your own meal, or you can stay in some really lovely hotels in the middle of the city and explore the food, because the food is amazing.
Did you have any particular hotels in the middle of town you would recommend?
So I highly recommend two places if you don't want to stay in a caravan park. One is called Pepper's Seaport Hotel, and it's basically an old mill. So it's right on the Tama River, and it's a really lovely place to stay. Otherwise, downtown, there's the Florence Launceston, and it was actually built by convicts. So it's old, and it's got that old world charm. Old world charm, Australian old world charm. It's not like it's not like Rome, but it's old English world charm. It's quite a cute little boutique hotel. So they're the two that I would highly recommend. And they've all got car spaces as well, like car parks, which is always important. That's the first thing I always look at in a city, because I like to drive around.
Okay.
So there's something about day two that I need to explain. So day two is going to be in Evandale. Evandale is a very old historical place, but it is also the place where the Guinness Book of Record is held for the largest penny farthing race in the world. And it's done once a year, annual. It's not a race, a festival. So, but there is a race there, but it's the championships in general is the Guinness Book of Records. So the race is on the 17th of February, and you have all these grown people riding penny farthings. And
we're talking about old style bicycles.
Yes, with no brakes.
Okay. With no brakes. Okay.
Yeah.
With a great big wheel in the front.
Exactly. And the only reason I say no brakes, because I was lucky enough to be able to ride one when I was there. I was petrified, and this is going to make me sound really, really old, but I have a knee replacement, and I was so scared of trying to get off the bike with no brake that I was really scared to get on it. But in fact, it's not so difficult. It's a little bit wobbly when you ride it, because as you go around the corner, it's a very thin wheel, and it's a bit scary, but you don't really go fast enough to feel like you're going to fall off it, really. But that's a load of fun.
You do know that when they went from penny farthings to the bicycle shape we're more familiar with, they first call those safety bicycles.
Oh, did they? Now I know why. Because even getting up on it is an issue, right? Because there's a little
that
step.
That seems like that would be the scariest part, actually.
There's a little step, so it's not so bad. And it's the getting off, honestly. I got someone to help me get off, but most people will just stop and then either go over the top or go over the side. I'm like, no, thank you. Can you just stop the bike for me when I get there? And they say they were really lovely.
There's no chain. So you're actually, the pedals are attached directly to the spoke of the big wheel in the front.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm so glad that technology's come into place and we can ride a bike safely. In Australia, you have to wear helmets. Well, I wore a helmet there anyway, but back in the day, you didn't wear a helmet. So if you are there in February, that would be a fantastic time to go watch this race. When we were there, there was the guy that was teaching us. His daughter was also there, and she's one of the best riders in the world. She competes in all of the events. There's quite a few around the world, and she beat him. She actually, right at the end, she ended up beating, because they'd had a race in front of us, and she's in her 20s, I think, early 20s. So she's been doing it since she was a little baby or something, a little kid. Because then they have smaller ones when you start, and then they have bigger ones as you grow up, which is quite fascinating. I don't really know why there is a penny farthing association to this area. I did try to look it up, but there's no rhyme or reason, to be honest. The other big festival is in Canada. So I don't know. I actually don't really know why. But they were saying that anybody can start. So there's a few different races. Anyone can go into the race as a beginner, and a beginner means anybody that hasn't raced in that race before. So you can have raced all around the world and then go into this race for the first time, and you can go in the beginner's race. So you can smash it which is what happened to this young girl, she was saying.
Got it.
From this lady in Canada who's the world record holder. But anyway, enough about the race. If you aren't there during that time, it's a really cool area to have a look around. They've got little antique shops and little boutiques, and they've got little cafes. And in fact, they have a pub there that Ned Kelly's father spent the last 2 years of his life, because it used to be an old prison. And I guess, yeah, you know who Ned Kelly is.
I don't think most people in our audience, okay, are going to know who Ned Kelly is.
Okay, so Ned Kelly is probably our most famous, what do you call it?
Bandit?
That's what I'm looking for. Yes, bandit. So he...
Bushranger would be the...
Bushranger, that's the
Australian term, yep.
So Ned Kelly was a bushranger, probably our most famous one, who ran riot all through mainly Victoria, but also Tasmania. That's what he's known for. He used to wear one of those iron masks with the eyes and mouth taken out of. I guess these days you would just have it's a balaclava made of tin. But his father obviously also was a bit of a naughty boy, because he ended up spending 2 years in prison, in this particular prison, which is now a pub or a hotel. And it was built by the convicts. So that area of the beer garden is still as it was. It has had been refurbished, but is as it was back in 1847. So that's quite interesting.
And if you said the name of the pub, I missed it.
Oh, okay. The pub called Clarendon Arms Hotel, and it used to be a police station. So Ned Kelly's father lived his last 2 years in that prison. So that's what it's notorious for. It's also, I don't know if you've ever heard of a guy called Chopper Reed.
No.
So Chopper Reed was a bikie, an Australian bikie, who was a whistleblower.
Did you say bikie?
Bikie. Do you know? Yeah, like in a bikie gang, like a
biker.
Motorbike.
Okay.
Gang.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, we call them bikies.
Got it.
So he's notorious for two things. He bit someone's ear off. No, he bit his own. No, he didn't bite his own ear off.
Biting your own ear off, that would be tricky.
That would be interesting.
That would be noteworthy.
He cut his own ear off, and he sent it to his idol, who was a big newsreader at the time, and she was in all magazines and stuff. Her name was Ida Buttrose. And so he's notorious for that, and he's also notorious for being a whistleblower and writing a book about all of his things he did while he was a bikie member. And one of them was shooting someone in that pub. So they're the two interesting facts about that pub. But in fact, it's a really cool little pub with some great pub food. So it's worth looking at. In the afternoon, you have two options. It depends on if you drink alcohol and what kind of alcohol you like to drink. So I went to the gin distillery. There's lots of them, but this one in particular is called the Western Tears. What it does is it has all the botanics from the area in its gin. It has a little bit of my favorite is the slow gin. I mean, have you ever drunk slow gin? I'm a big gin drinker anyway.
I've drunk gin slowly. Does that count?
Okay. Yeah. This is slow, S-L-O-E gin.
Yes.
So I know. You only just need to have it on ice, and it's got all the botanics of the area. They also have a gin there. I can't think of the name of it, but they have a gin there that turns purple once you pour your additives in there, which is quite pretty, but I still prefer the slow gin. This particular gin distillery also has tours, so it'll take you around and explain to you, obviously, how gin's made, but they also sell whiskey. So they'll explain to you the difference between Irish whiskey and Scottish whiskey, and it'll show you the process. And then you do tasting, which is quite fun.
And the gin that turns purple, I think you're talking about the Empress gin.
Yes. So the Empress gin, that's right. The Empress gin is the one that turns purple. I didn't like the flavor, but for me, the slow gin is probably my favorite. But they do have different seasonal. She was talking about having some seasonal gins as well because of the botanics in the area.
Okay.
And she has one that's coming out. It's not released yet, but I'm not really sure when that will be. The other option is beer. So if you prefer beer, there's a James Bogue Distillery. I'm not a beer drinker, but this is somewhere that everyone goes, because Bogue's beer in Australia is quite big And so everyone wants to go to the brewery. It was established 160 years ago. So it's been around a little while. And the guy, James Bogue, is actually from Scotland. So he established the beer in Tasmania. So you can do a tour there as well and tasting. That's like your two options depending on what you like to drink. If you drink, if you don't drink, then maybe you need to skip that afternoon and go eating somewhere. I was thinking that night you could either go test some of the restaurants. I've got quite a few restaurants on my website, but if not, then the food that you bought from the market the day before, you can cook at the barbecue. We do like our barbies in Australia, so there is a barbecue area. So day three is going to be busy. So day two was not busy. Day three is going to be busy. Day three is about depending on the weather. So obviously that part of the world, it does snow in Tasmania in winter. So I wouldn't recommend going river sledding in the winter, only in the summer or the warmer weather. If it's cold, then you can go mountain biking. There's heaps of places, Ben Lomond National Park, that you can go mountain biking. We went mountain biking, and can I tell you, it's not for the faint-hearted. If you are a little bit
You're not trying to do it on a penny farthing, are you?
No, this was not as tame as a tame penny farthing. It was full-on, and you know what? You do go with a guide. He will show you the ropes and he will take you around and go on it. He said it was an easy course, but for me, it was not an easy course. I found it a really hard course. And then the younger people in the group went on the harder course. It's got lots of dips and stuff like that. And so if you like mountain biking, then that's your option. But I'm going to recommend going river sledding.
Okay.
You have a guide.
I know what river sledding is, or at least I had to Google what river sledding was.
Okay, so it's fun. Can I say it's fun? It's also not for the faint-hearted. The guide will actually show you the techniques and he'll explain to you. They're all experienced guides. So as long as you stick with the guide and his instructions, it's a fun morning. And Meander River has some really lovely areas that in the afternoon you can go walking. So you can spend the whole day at the Meander Valley, go sledding.
But we haven't talked about what sledding is. I would say it's taking in what I would call an air mattress in white water.
Correct. So it's easier than whitewater rafting, but you're doing it individually. That's probably the best way to explain it. Okay. And it depends on your level of expertise. If it's for someone like me who's an absolute wuss, anybody can do it. I reckon a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old. But I think that sort of thing for me is a lot of fun. I've done it in New Zealand as well, and I found it here was a lot more fun. And I don't know, that's because it's Australian and we like to claim everything as our own. Moving right along. In the afternoon, I would suggest going for a hike. This part of the world is so pretty and you get to see a lot of wildlife. You won't see the Tasmanian devil, but you will see a lot of echidna. You'll see a lot of wombats and a lot of wallabies. The wallabies here are different. The wallabies here are fluffier and lighter in colour. That's how you know they're from northern Tasmania. I wouldn't go up and pat them, but there's plenty in the wilderness that you'll probably get to see them. And even at the Big Four, you'll see them at night jumping around, which is quite cool. So in the afternoon, you can go like a proper hike or you can go for a walk. And there's a track called the Quambi Bluff Track, which is quite mellow in comparison to other hikes around the area. This area doesn't have Cradle Mountain, but it's just different areas. With Cradle Mountain, you're on the cusp of this area, but not quite. So I would suggest going somewhere like Meander Valley or Ben Lomond National Park as a place where you'd like to hike if you want to go proper hiking.
And I don't know Cradle Mountain, so I don't know what I'm comparing it to.
Okay, so Cradle Mountain in Tasmania has a six-day proper hike. So you can
go for
6 days. Yeah. Yeah, every country says it different. But so it's carrying your own stuff and they have little cabins. There's a certain amount of people can go each day. And then once you get to the cabin, lots of times they might be full. So you can take your camping gear and camp out. But generally speaking, you would, depending on time of year, go from cabin to cabin. It's a 6-day hike.
Well, you mentioned time of year a couple of times here. You recommended, I think you're talking about a summer itinerary in general.
Well, I'm going to say a warmer weather itinerary. So for us, you can go, I would just suggest not going for this itinerary between the months of, say, May to August, September. Okay. Every other month is cooler or warmer or no snow. You can do a lot more stuff outside. But if you're a real winter person, then this is a great place to go in winter because you can do things that you can't do in summer, obviously, like ski or go truffle hunting, which you can't do in summer.
You can't do truffle hunting in summer?
No. So the truffle hunting season is from June to September.
I did not know this. Okay.
It's on my bucket list, so that's why I'm going to go back in winter because I really want to go and do some truffle hunting. I have a list of things, 50 things to do before you're 50, and that's one of them that I didn't get to do. So now that I'm 50, I'm going to do 50 things to do while I'm 50. Truffle hunting's one of them.
And am I doing truffle hunting with a dog here or am I doing it with a pig?
I don't know. Shoot. I think it is a dog because I don't think pigs is Europe, right?
Pigs is part of Europe. Yeah. Sure, if there's a pig, there's probably a barbecue involved is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Absolutely. So definitely truffle hunting with a dog. So this is the thing about winter there. You can do so much in winter. There's a place called Fork to Farm that really is only during the cooler months where you can go to this place called Fork to Farm and it's a one long table and you can have dinner from the farm, the produce that they produce on the farm. They do it one Saturday a month and it's in the cooler months. And so there's heaps of things to do in the winter. But I'm going off par here. We are sticking with summer weather.
And there it turns out I might in fact run into a pig, but deconstructed fashion. So
yeah, exactly. So that day is a full-on day, and I thought you could treat yourself to a really good Italian restaurant called Bar Stello. And it has all your favorites. The reason I say this one is because all the produce is from the area. All the restaurants that I have mentioned or that I mentioned, all the produce is from the area. So I want you to taste why it's classed as the city of gastronomy. And these are the restaurants that always come up and pop up when people recommend places. But I was fortunate. I'm a foodie, so I was fortunate enough to be able to try them.
I think we had discovered that by now.
So. I'm Italian. I like to eat. I like to eat and like to drink. So the next day, funny enough, is a wine tour.
Okay.
So I need to tell you a little bit about this region. This region, I personally, and actually I'm not an expert, but there are a lot of experts out there saying the same thing, is that right now this region, because it's a cooler climate region, has the best Pinot Noir coming out of this part of the world. And I'm gonna be, lots of people are gonna hate me for that because South Australia has some amazing wines, especially Pinot Noirs, and so does New Zealand. But I'm gonna predict that this is gonna be the hotspot of the future. I do like wine tours and I do love wine. I'm not a wine connoisseur, but I do believe this part of the area with the cooler climate, the sparkling that's coming out of here is amazing, and so is the Pinot Noir. So is all the other stuff. But
well, since we're talking Pinot Noirs, it's really the cool spot of the region rather than the hot spot. But
correct. Yeah.
Okay.
But you can go there any time of the year. That's the good thing about these vineyards.
Is there a particular vineyard you're recommending?
There is, but before I get there's two options you can do this. You can do this the bougie way and you can get a helicopter ride. It's by Unique Tours. So they do this trifecta tour where they go to three wineries and have lunch and you go by helicopter. It's pretty amazing, actually. And this area is so pretty, just going up and having a look around and I'm afraid of heights, but this helicopter, because I don't know, I just felt safe in this kind of, I guess because the doors are closed and you're tightly, but he's all quite knowledgeable. So he'll talk to you about the area and where you're going. And then you'll do tours and tastings in each of these regions. Now that's the bougie way. There's another couple of ways. One is you could do a wine tour, like a guided wine tour, or you can go and drive around yourself. I highly recommend a place called the Swinging Gate Vineyard. They do wine tasting. And when I was there, they did blind wine tasting. So they put thing around my eyes and you had to choose not the grape, thank God, but the color and then the type of wines. I didn't win the overall prize, but then we did a quiz of all the different wines and the vineyards and stuff and the grapes and stuff. And I won that. So I didn't walk away too bad with my head between my legs, but, and they're really lovely. They've got a dog there that has more Instagram followers than me. So their dog is quite famous. I need to figure out the name of the dog, but that they're famous for having this, is it a blue heeler? It's a, like a farm dog who has its own book. They have a calendar and a book that's dedicated to the dogs around the region. And so people go to this particular place to see the dog, but the wine is also really good. So I highly recommend that place.
Got it. Okay.
Did you want to know the name of the dog? Do I need to Google it?
Nelly the dog.
Nelly. So Nelly the dog is more famous than lots of people I know around that area. So today was a big day. You're drinking and you're eating. And so tonight you have off. You're just free to go back and cook whatever you want or wander around and find something. Or they do in that area have Uber Eats. So you can go and do whatever you want on that day. We're halfway through the 7-day itinerary. So day 5 is also another very busy adventure day. We are going to go caving. There is a place called Mole Creek. So the lady that took us on a tour, she is from Wild Caves and she's been in that area all her life. So she actually chained herself to trees back in the day to save the area. So she's very much into preserving what that area is about. It's a really, it's a beautiful area. You can actually drive in there and camp there as well, but this particular area is very good for rock climbing and caving. Okay. So you can go in summer and winter. She does do a winter tour, but in summer she does a tour that entails, she talks about the indigenous people and the history of the indigenous land. There is glowworms in there as well. So if you're lucky enough to get to see them. I don't know if she does this on every tour, but she did get her flute out and start playing to the glowworms so they came out. Not quite sure if that's a ordinary thing on her tour, but she did it on ours. She's a very interesting person to speak to because she knows a lot of history about the area, a lot about way before the area was settled. So a lot about the indigenous and the area and the limestone. Quite interesting how she can get through some of the caving areas. So she takes you through these little tiny little, you know, so if you're claustrophobic, this isn't the place for you, but she takes you through these tiny little areas and then she pushes you through other ones. I don't know if there's a height or a weight restriction, but we all got through pretty good.
Well, and what I'm seeing is you're wearing headlamps,
yes,
helmets, and coveralls because you're not just casually walking through the cave.
Correct. So you do wear gum boots and she gives you all the material.
Yep.
My gum boots were so big that I felt like they were walking away without me. But you have to go with whatever sizes that she has.
Translation for my US listeners, rubber boots.
Oh, rubber boots. Okay. Rubber boots or what do they call them? Wellies.
Wellies, yeah, if you're, if we want to translate for our UK audience. Or, yeah, exactly.
So she does give you all that. She gives you your little lamp, headlamp, and your helmet and your overalls, your blue overalls. You look very attractive, so it's not a fashion show, I can guarantee that, because you are walking through lots of areas that are got lots of water, and so you will not necessarily get wet, but you will get dirty because you are crawling through little holes and things like that. So then she gives you lunch, so that's quite nice. That day is big. So you can either do morning tours, afternoon tours, or a full day tour. I'm going to say let's do a 6-hour tour because you go canyoning and you go abseiling. On the shorter tours, you don't do any of that. You just do the abseiling part. So it's a big day. So be prepared to be tired by the end of it. I think it's another just rest day. And I don't know, I guess this is for every age group, but in particular, people that are a little more mobile. You wouldn't be obviously be able to do anything like this if you were restricted to a wheelchair or crutches or walking stick.
And honestly, I don't know if I need to translate abseiling to rappelling or if everybody knows that or not. So, but we'll just say
I don't, what is rappelling the same thing? I've never even heard the word.
Yeah, going down a cliff face on a rope.
Yes, backwards.
Yep.
I'm not great with heights, but It feels safe. I'm not sure why. We went abseiling outside, and can I tell you, I'm not the best with heights, but going backwards is not the best way to feel like you might die. But it, but they do make you feel, they do make you, they, you know what I mean? Like, they do actually make you feel warm and welcome, and someone goes before you, and then they, and you know what, for me, who's absolutely terrified, I wanted to go in the middle of the group. I didn't want to leave till the end, okay. And I didn't want to go straight away. And they said, whenever I'm ready, then I can go. And so that was probably the scariest day, is the whole abseiling thing. But for those who are adrenaline junkies, it's probably amazing. But I did it, and I'm still here, so it's all good. It's quite safe. And that's the other thing about Tasmania. There's abseiling everywhere. So there's a lot of companies that take you abseiling out into the wilderness, outside into the national forests and national parks and stuff. All these adventures that I'm talking about, they can be done through lots of different companies in lots of different areas. I'm just giving you the rundown of the places that I've been to.
Okay.
The sixth day, we're going to spend the whole day at the Holly Trees Adventure Park. And here you can do lots of different things. You can go zip lining. You can do rope courses. You can go and do Segway tours. And you can also go mountain biking. Again, mountain biking, you go with a guide, and there's hard and easy tracks. So, and again, with the zip lining as well, they will guide you through it. And before you go, they kit you up again, a very pretty day again. So you kit it up into your harness and your overalls, and they take you on a course of zip lining. And it's not just one. A lot of countries or a lot of places you go to, you go zip lining from A to B. This is like A to B to C to D to E. There's high ones, there's smaller ones, and it's not scary. Yeah, I mean, I've been on a few zip lines that are super scary. These aren't, because they're not far enough. There's a few long ones, but they're not far enough to think about how far you may drop, if you know what I mean. So it's fun. I did the zip lining. We did the Segway. But you can spend a whole day there because there's a cafeteria, so you can eat there. And the people are lovely. They're all young, obviously, because they're all adrenaline junkies. And the tour guides that we had were amazing. They all lived in the area for many years. They know the area very well, so they'll give you facts about the forest and all the things around it, and also the wildlife. So it's not just a little adventure, it's also professional guided tours that they do as well.
Got it.
Okay, so you are on your last day, and I'm going to leave the best to last. So your seventh day, you're going to spend the morning at the Cataract Gorge. So this is probably the most famous place in this part of the region. And that's because of a couple of things. It's been around forever. So this is where, obviously, where the convicts first were, or the first people settled were around this area. There's a lot of Aboriginal history. So you can go on guided tours, and they will show you a little bit of bush tucker in the area. A bush tucker is what the Aboriginal call eating off their land. And you can go on a tour, or you can just look around yourself. There's some really good walking paths. In summer, there's a huge swimming pool, so you can go swimming. They also have the longest chairlift in the Southern Hemisphere, or could be the world, actually. It's probably the best thing to do in the area, and it's for all ages.
Okay.
So the morning is spent just there. There's a cafeteria there as well, so you can eat lunch or breakfast or whatever. And it's actually walking distance from the Big Fork Holiday Park. So it's literally, I don't know, just 10 minutes to walk there. So the afternoon, if it's warmer months, in the afternoon you can go truffle hunting if it's from June to September. But we're going to go to an area called Brigadon, and actually UNESCO listed heritage site, and it's a place where the convicts built, and I guess everywhere is where convicts built, but this is still standing, and the area was established in 1824, and again, that's very old for us. It's got a homestead. The original owners are still, it's still in the family, so that's quite an interesting fact because we don't have that much of that kind of history in Australia. You can then go to Woolmer's Lane, which is a rural settlement. So that's another place where there's a lot of history. I'm not quite sure how much it costs to get in, but both those places are definitely worth going just because there's a lot of history there and a lot of history about the convict era and why they settled and how they settled and what it used to look like back in the day and how it's still maintained. So your afternoon is just full of history. But that night, you have to go to the Stillwater restaurant. It is probably the most famous restaurant in Launceston, and that's because it was an old mill, a flour mill. I think it was 2000 that it was changed into a restaurant, but it's been established since 1830. So it's quite a lovely end to your seven-day itinerary because it's a little bit of a splurge, but it's lovely. If you go in the day, there's a beautiful view, but if you go at night, obviously there's no view there, but the atmosphere is nice. If you like spicy food, I like spicy food, so I was fine with it. When you ask them what they recommend the noodles, and they are very, very nice, but they are very, very spicy. So if you like spicy food, that's what you need to order. So that's where your seven-day itinerary finishes on a high. I left it to last because there's so much more places where there's so many great places to eat that I wanted the last one to be probably the one that everyone talks about and is a true reminiscence of that area, the history combined with the food and the atmosphere. I find that Launceston, you know what, I've been calling Launceston all my life until I got there and I got scolded by so many people because the locals call it Launceston and they call it Lonnie. Like every other Aussie, we like to change the name of things. So their beloved Lonnie is Launceston, not Launceston, which as an Australian, I was quite embarrassed to say that I didn't know that. So that's your seven-day itinerary.
Excellent. And in terms of road trips, this is not very far that we're driving.
No, not at all.
From Launceston to Evandale is what, 15 kilometers, 30, maybe, tops?
Yeah. The longest drive will be 1 hour. Oh, no, actually, no, it won't. It'll be about 40 minutes. That's your longest drive. And if you go in winter, and I've done a seven-day itinerary, again, your longest drive will be about an hour. But I think what I wanted to do was really showcase that unique area, that very specific area. You could do 2 weeks of just, there's so much more to see and do, but I tried to just get a glimpse of the highlights of the fun things to do in the area and experience. I loved it. It's one of those places where, you know, when you travel a lot, you have expectations of all these places.
Sure.
And when I got there, I just had no expectation. And you know what? It went beyond anything that I would have had. Yeah, because Tasmania for me has always been about going there in winter or going hiking in Cradle Mountain. But this area is amazing.
One question for you. I didn't want to interrupt you when early on. You talked about getting there and you talked about one option was the ferry. And I wasn't sure the ferry was from where to where.
Okay. So you can, if you're doing a big trip of Australia and you really wanted to drive around, then you can drive your car onto a ferry from Geelong in Victoria.
Okay,
and
got it.
You can, yeah. And then
not
you
that
can
far from
land.
Melbourne.
No, it's about an hour from Melbourne. It's not that far, but it's, I think it's an overnight, like 11 hours, 10 hours or something.
Got
so,
it. Okay.
But even from Devonport, Launceston, it's only an hour. It's not far.
Okay.
Tasmania's not big.
Got it. Anything else people should know before they book their airfare to Tasmania?
Explore. I would say, you know what? If you really like an adventure holiday, then you can spend every day doing adventure stuff, but really explore the countryside and explore the food. I think if you want to combine it with a week in, say, Hobart and stuff and have this as another option, or if you've already done the other one, I think what happens, you come to Australia, because for most people it's far away. So you come to Australia and you do Queensland, you do Sydney, you do Melbourne, and you forget about, or rural, and you do Uluru or something like that, and you forget the rest of Australia. I would say this by far is one of my favourite destinations in the whole of Australia. Besides Sydney, I'm a Sydney local, so I have to say Sydney. Besides Sydney, this, I think if you want something different, if you don't want just the norm, then this is the place that you need to be. It's a real hidden gem.
Excellent. One thing I noticed as I'm looking at the map of Tasmania is there were a lot of national parks. And so I looked it up, and basically it's about half of Tasmania. Yeah. Half of the state of Tasmania is parks. Yeah. So,
well, it's why it's such a hiking area, right?
Sure. Excellent. As we get to some of our wrap-up questions, you're standing in the prettiest spot in northern Tasmania. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
You have to be looking at the gorge. Yeah, you have to be actually on the chairlift, looking down and over. You're still technically in one space, but you're just moving along. And that area there is so pretty, and it's nothing like any other part of Tasmania.
Excellent. Although I did find it is not even the longest chairlift in Australia. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'll take that back.
But we often hear those sort of things from the tourism boards, and you have to look them up. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Tasmania.
Only in Tasmania will you see grown men riding a penny farthing very fast.
It's because it's a very bad idea.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you're a newbie and you've never done it before.
And if you had to summarize the region in just three words, what three words would you use?
Oh, this is a hard one. So it'd be gastronomy, obviously, because the food is amazing. Okay. Landscape, because it's nowhere like anywhere else in Australia.
Okay.
And it would be the people, because the people are so funny and friendly, and everyone will say hello when they walk past. So it'd have to be the people.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Paula Barnes. From, among other places, we should say, trulyexpattravel.com is not your only site. You also have a site about Singapore, just about Singapore, where you've lived for a number of years. What is that site name?
So that's Truly Expat Lifestyle.
Oh, okay.
There's a theme here.
Got it. If we want to send people to your best post on Tasmania at trulyexpattravel.com, where are we going to send them?
There's a 7-day itinerary. It's basically that. It's a Northern Tasmania 7-day itinerary. And you have two options, the winter and the summer months.
Excellent. Well, Paula, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for Northern Tasmania.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by ButcherBox. The best meals start with the best ingredients, and ButcherBox has high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. They have 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. If you're looking for inspiration what to do with a fine cut of meat, they provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. I think it's time for me personally to up my game on what I can do with a good steak. But email me and I'll send you my port wine reduction and blue cheese sauce recipe that is to die for. That'll go well with your first order. ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life for your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/traveler, and use code TRAVELER to get free ground beef for life plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/traveler and code TRAVELER. And thanks to ButcherBox for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially, and thanks this time to Rekha Gupta, who is the latest patron of Amateur Traveler. The patrons get an ad-free version of the show, get it a little earlier, and then also get a monthly Zoom call. If you're interested in learning more, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.